California Report was brought to you by Wozniak Construction, with 30 years experience taking projects from concept to completion. Custom carpentry or complete buildings, 962-0932. Well, this is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, K201 HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and KZYX.org on the World Wide Web. It's just 7 o'clock and time for Education Now. Education Now is being brought to you tonight by you, our members. So let's have some music.
Are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
Well, hello, my name is Athena Melville, and Education Now tonight, we're going to feature a recording of Senator Christopher Dodd, Senior Senator from Connecticut. And Senator Dodd was speaking at the AMS Centennial Celebration on March 4th, 2007, to more than 5,000 participants in New York City. Maya Angelou was there, Jonathan Cozzal, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Dr. Marlene Baron, and of course Senator Christopher Dodd. Well, why were they there? Well, in 1907, Maria Montessori opened her Casa di Bambini in Italy, and she was the first female physician in Italy. She got her degree as a medical doctor, and much to the delight of her mother, although she wanted to be a teacher, her mother didn't feel that that was challenging enough. If you can imagine, her mother was a real feminist, and so Montessori pursued her education as a doctor. Over time here on Education Now, I've brought you the work of William Crane and Roger Hart and Alfie Cohn and Betsy Coe and Art Costa, and only Betsy Coe of that list is what you would call a Montessorian. All the rest of them are people who just prove how innovative and inspirational Montessori's observations and science were. She was a futurist who believed in cosmic consciousness. In February, it was the month to celebrate women, and I had really wanted to take that opportunity to celebrate Montessori, because she is quite a remarkable woman. She was acknowledged by the Pope in her day. You can see her face on the money in Italy. And even though she had a child out of wedlock, she was, you know, recognized by the Pope. So, as you see, life is full of contradictions. Senator Dodd's father, Senator Thomas J. Dodd, was the person who introduced, helped start AMS, which is the American Montessori Society Corporation, in the early 60s. And Chris Dodd's younger sister, Carolyn Dodd, who is now a teacher herself, became the poster child for Montessori education. Senator Dodd was introduced to the more than 5,000 people at the Montessori Conference by Doug Revelle, who is keeper of the Montessori history. And after Dodd's address, you'll hear from Jack Blessington for the outro, which I think you'll enjoy very much. The only thing I think you need to know before I start this wonderful interview or address is that they will refer, one thing that you might not, when they refer to an accident that Dr. Maureen Baron had when she spilled water all over her computer, and they talk about Neenhaus creating a material, because of course Neenhaus creates precision Montessori materials, and so that's, if you don't, I wanted to tell you that in case you didn't get that joke. Now, I'll talk some more about Maria Montessori after you hear the interview. This quite remarkable woman, her observations are just being proven by scientists to this day, and her intuition was just so right on. And so let's begin now with that interview. Here we go. I'm going to bring it up. Here we go. And I'm going to push on.
2007 American Montessori Society meeting. The Honorable Christopher J. Dodd.
That's a hard act to follow. That's not terribly fair, Doug, to have done that to me. And if I had known you were going to have Maya Angelou last evening, that's also unfair to bring me before you this morning with such remarkable people who have preceded me. But I thank you immensely. I thank you, Doug, for those kind words and remembering my father. Judy, I thank you for your kind words as well in talking about my involvement over the years with the American Montessori Society, and I thank all of you for extending the honor of asking me to be your honorary chair of this very important centennial meeting. So I'm delighted to be with you this morning and tell you what it's an honor and a pleasure to be before you, to share some thoughts with you on public policy, if you will, and important issues that come before us. It's always a source of some amusement back home when someone asked me to offer my opinion on schools, I find. The truth is, if you ranked my family for accomplishments in education, I'd probably finish fifth or sixth in that consideration. In fact, I come from a family of educators, as I'm sure many of you may already know because of some of the comments that have been made, starting with my great-grandmother, Catherine Murphy, who came to this country unable to read or write her own name, but shortly after arriving in a little town in Connecticut, managed to get herself elected to the local school board because she knew and understood the future belonged to education. Her granddaughter, my mother, received her undergraduate degree in Latin and Greek in the 1920s. And my father's three sisters were teachers for over 40 years apiece in the public school system of Connecticut. As a senator, my father helped bring the Montessori teachers and learning materials to America. And Doug, I thank you for remembering those days in the 1960s. My brother Tom has been a professor at Georgetown University for 27 years. But probably most importantly for the people gathered in this room, here this morning, it was my sister Carolyn, who was the teacher for more than four decades, many of them, if not most of them, as a Montessori teacher, that truly has made the difference in our family. So I have to apologize this morning. You're probably hearing from the least qualified member of my family to be standing before you to address the subject of education. In fact, I must tell you, as one of the fifth of six children, those of you who come from large families, you'll appreciate when you come sort of the end of the litter, how you're treated by your siblings. I hear when I gather for family occasions, my older siblings still, they deferential, they call me senator, but they still ask me to perform the same chores I did as a child. So it's senator, take out the trash, and senator, clear off the table. Not my sister Carolyn, but another sister came to hear me give a talk not too long ago in Massachusetts. She lives in Providence. And the master of ceremonies was rather generous in his introduction. He went on at some length and concluded the introduction by saying, "It now gives me a great deal of pleasure to present to you not only a great senator from the state of Connecticut." Now remember, my sister's in the front row. But he said, "But one of the great leaders of the Western world." Well, I looked at my sister. I said, "I hope you heard that about your little brother here this morning." We're driving back to Providence that evening during one of those quiet moments in the car, and I turned to my sister Martha and I said, "Martha, how many great leaders of the Western world do you think there are?" And only as an older sister could say, "One less than you think. Just keep driving that car to get us home." So I was like, former great leader of the Western world. Get brought down to size very quickly. Let me share some thoughts with you here this morning, and a lot of this you know already, obviously, as people deeply dedicated to this subject matter. But I want to tell you something else as well. I get asked a lot these days, obviously, being involved in public life, being involved in the United States Senate, and pursuing another journey these days. I often ask, it's the worst question to get in some ways, but what is the single most important subject matter that you think our country faces? And without any hesitation, I answer very simply, as I have 1,000 times, the single most important subject matter is the subject matter which brings us here, and that is the subject of education. That is the critical subject matter, in my view, and one that we've got to want to address. So I'm here to share, of course, this sense of pride all of you in this room feel on the 100th anniversary of the American Montessori movement. Today, Montessori schools, of course, are respected all over the globe, but that wasn't always the case. I remember my sister Carolyn, of course, once telling me the story of how she was in the dentist's office one day, and just as she was going under the ether, the dentist asked her, "So," he said, "you work for Montessori." "Isn't that the fancy Italian ice cream company here that is at work?" So when truly a new idea comes to the world, it has to struggle just to tell the world its name. And even once the name is known, the idea has to wrestle the doubt, the lassitude, the orthodoxy of all those who have a stake in the status quo. I recently read a Time magazine article in which a critic wrote, and I quote him, he said he confidently expects the American Montessori Society will die within 3 years, end of quote. That article was dated 1964, Doug, and you'll recall those days very well. Well, I'm here this morning to thank all of you for providing or proving that individual wrong. Thank you for seeing Maria Montessori's new idea into a fruitful middle age. But I'll tell you who we need to thank above all else, and that is the children, who in their time were deemed unworthy of education and who proved all the skeptics wrong. That's what the society thought of Dr. Montessori's first students. They were the expendable ones. In fact, those were the only students she could find to teach as she started out. By the turn of the last century, Maria Montessori had already established herself as a professor of anthropology, a leading feminist in her country, and the nation's only, or the first rather, female physician. So you can imagine, if you could, one of Rome's leading families entrusting her with their children. "You want our boy to play with blocks all day? When is he going to learn to sit still?" Well, instead, Maria Montessori took on other students, Rome's severely disabled children. She often found them locked in bare asylum rooms, their food thrown in through a slit in the door. Dr. Montessori saw them reaching for the crumbs and realized that they weren't doing it out of hunger. They were desperate for stimulation. With that realization came a crucial insight. Children want to educate themselves. The children had just become the teachers. Dr. Montessori took that insight into the classroom, and for a long time, she simply watched. She found what frightened them, what made them laugh, what bored them, what caught their eye, what was beyond them, and what they were ready to learn. "I studied my children," she said. They taught me how to teach them. And when she was through with them, children who we were thought to be unteachable were passing tests designated for the so-called average student. Still, her method was considered far too radical for the government. The public schools refused to hire. So 100 years ago, this past January, she founded her children's house in the Roman slum of San Lorenzo. It was reported that the local construction workers begged her to enroll all of the small children she could find so they would stop climbing all over the building sites in that area. Why fight all of that energy? Why not use it? Madame Montessori said. Give her new students the run of the school. She discovered that they loved to count, loved stacking number blocks, and soon her 4 and 5 year olds were adding 4 and 5 digit numbers. That was the start of the success we're celebrating today. Thanks to her, to the children, to the people like my sister Carolyn, to Doug Gravel, Nancy Rambush, and so many others, and all of you gathered here today, the American Montessori Society is very much alive and well and will be for years and years and years to come. And I thank you, all of you, for what you've done here. But just as remarkable as Dr. Montessori's willingness to teach the unteachable was her willingness to respect them as well. In a time when lectures and rote memorization were universal from kindergarten to college, she literally took the teacher's desk out of the classroom. She gave up control in a way that few teachers ever had because she understood why the system of her day was holding children back. The system itself was meant to make life easier for the adults. It's easier, obviously, to stand in front of a room and talk. It's easier to look out at straight rows and still bodies. But what's easy and what's right are rarely the same. A Montessori education is called child-centered. And to me, that means putting the convenience of adults exactly where it belongs, last. Once Dr. Montessori was trying to amuse her students by showing them silly ways to blow their noses, the children watched in rapt attention, but failed to laugh, she reported. I wondered why, but I hardly had finished my demonstration when the children broke out into applause that resembled a long repressed ovation in a theater, she said. Thank you for teaching me how to blow my nose, one child shouted. Dr. Montessori had no idea what to make of that until something occurred to her a few days later. She saw adults punishing children for runny noses, but she couldn't remember seeing an adult take the time to show how a nose was supposed to be blown. You only need 5 seconds to punish the wrong behavior, but to teach the right one, you need uncommon reserves of time and patience, she said. What then are the lessons that we learn from Dr. Montessori? What are examples from her readiness to remove herself from the center of the classroom and from her years of work with her society's expendables? First, when it comes to educating our children, it's not about us, it's about them. And second, it's about all of them. Well, how can we put those lessons to work today? Let me share some thoughts with you. What can we do now to get this right for our children? For me, it starts with confessing our limits. I'll never affect the life of a student as very directly as my sister Carolyn has and my brother Tom have over their many years of dedicated teaching. Yet I still believe that working from Washington with public policy, we can still shape the lives of our nation's children for better. We can still turn principles into practice. I'd like to share with you a few of the ways I think we can do that. First and foremost, we need to make it easier, far easier today, for parents to take part in their children's education. Secondly, we need to reform the No Child Left Behind law. We need equal expectations and equal resources for all of our children. Fourth, we need to keep our promises. We need to keep our promises to our most vulnerable students. And lastly, we need to bring quality pre-kindergarten education to every single child in America, in my view. Let me, if I can, first of all, I want to start with the foundation, with the first teachers, if you will, the parents. I'm a first-time parent, by the way. I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. I'm probably the only candidate for the presidency who gets mail from AARP and diaper services. I want you to know here, to stand before you today. So this is more than just a theoretical discussion I'm having with you here this morning. I'm sure the parents in the room would certainly agree, and this would understand the success of our children from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. rests heavily on what goes on between 3 p.m. and bedtime. If you build your home on a love of learning, of reading, spending time and talking with your children, educating at home, or even if you simply insist that the TV stay off until the homework is done, you're going to do your sons and daughters a great deal of good. It might take a while for them to realize that, but they'll ultimately appreciate the effort that parents can make. So we need to make sure that parents have the time to be with their children. I'm proud of many things I've done in the Senate over the last 26 years, but nothing has given me as much pleasure than to watch 50 million Americans take advantage of the Family and Medical Leave Act, which I wrote some 12 years ago. That bill was designed to provide parents with time away from their jobs without losing those jobs during the illness of a child, the birth or adoption of a child, or the spouse or parents of those individuals, and certainly has made a difference. Well, I believe we should go a bit step further in this if we truly believe that parents should be involved, more involved than they are today, with the education of their children. I think we should also help parents stay involved in the life of their children's schools. And I have, for instance, I want parents to have at least 24 hours a year, just 24 hours a year, to attend teacher conferences, school activities, to be able to have that time to be there without losing their jobs or having their jobs pull at risk. We ought to make it possible for that to occur. We need far more involvement from Head Start parents as well. Parental involvement is a hallmark of Head Start, but when children leave the program, parental involvement declines sharply. So we're working to enhance the collaboration between Head Start schools and parents to make sure that parents stay active in their children's growth. Secondly, I want to talk about our schools themselves, the way we grade them, the way we test our children. Any honest observer today would have to admit that the measures we now use are simply overly simplistic in determining how children are doing. Let me say to all of you that I'm not opposed to standardized testing, but I recognize that all too often, like many of our flawed educational practices, our tests cater first to adults and their conveniences. That's especially the case when there's a single, rigid definition of success. No one test, no single test, can ever take the full measure of a child. But we could come a lot closer if we use the full array of measures available to us. That's why we need to take a far closer look at No Child Left Behind. No Child Left Behind presumes that there's only one way to determine the quality of a school, the performance on an annual test. But you and I know that such one-dimensional standards sells our children short. Why not measure the individual child's rate of improvement? Why not look at the school's success at graduating its students? Why not look at a variety of other ways to determine how well that child and that institution are doing? Maria Montessori would have told the authors of No Child Left Behind, observing the whole child or the whole school may be harder, but true education starts with two words: look closer. Look closer. And that's what needs to be happening here. As long as No Child Left Behind is the law of the land, we're going to have to work to reform it, in my view. Let's make sure that quality schools aren't left behind simply because we're looking with one eye shut. Thirdly, we must confront our continued willingness to ask unequal things of our children. We must have high expectations for every child who goes to school in our beloved country. But as things now stand, those expectations depend far too much on where that child goes to school. If a child is poor, or even happens to live in the wrong state or the wrong county within a state, he or she begins school knowing that the bar has already been set pitifully low. What a quality of opportunity can we claim when the gap between some states and even within states on basic eighth grade science tests is more than 30 points? For far too long, the skills and knowledge we expect of each child have been made contingent on the accident of birth. For equally too long, we've been content to act as if education of some of our children is simply worth less. More than 50 years ago, we ended school segregation in law, but it takes a pair of truly lying eyes to deny that it persists in fact. Among the developed countries, the United States ranks at the bottom in the disparity of schooling available to the rich and poor. This is the 21st century, my friends, in America, and this disparity must stop in our country. And we need to stand up and fight for it. And their so-called best children, as they were referred to, Maria Montessori's contemporaries saw minds waiting to be filled with classical learning. In the children of San Lorenzo, they saw bodies waiting to grow, to be big enough and strong enough for manual labor. I'm sorry to say that in their eyes, our country today would in many instances provide a very similar sight. If education is truly about every one of our children, then we need to change. We should require every state to find equitable resources for all of its school children, no matter where, no matter how poor, and bring up-to-date textbooks, for instance, should not be a luxury in our schools. Modern school buildings and computers and libraries must not be luxuries in American schools. Qualified teachers, e-caring guidance counselors, and rigorous curricula must not be luxuries as well, in our schools. Children should be entitled to them, in my view, because they happen to live, or not because they happen to live just in affluence. They should be entitled to them because they live in a place called America in the 21st century. We must all fight for that. Fourthly, our federal government can hardly make those demands on states if it fails to live up to its own obligations. When he signed the No Child Left Behind law, President Bush made a promise to low-income schools. "We'll hold you to high standards," he said, "but we'll give you the resources you need to meet them." 6 years later, Title I funding for low-income schools has fallen short by that promise by over $55 billion. That's an outrage in our country, and one of the reasons we need to change this law. But what about educating our students with disabilities? 32 years ago, the federal government promised to pay 40% of school special education costs. Any guess on how much we're actually paying today? 30%, 20%, fact is less than 16% of these funds have been made available, creating additional burdens. Head Start hasn't fared any better, I point out to you. Remember, this is the program that provides comprehensive services to our poorest children. It's the fuel for their academic future, and it hasn't received a funding increase for over 5 years. Fifthly, the last step that I mentioned to you here this morning that we can take to give a child, every child, a chance at an excellent education. Dr. Montessori saw that a child's first years were the foundation of learning. That's one of the reasons why she sought out students too young for the public schools. The most recent research has proven her right. Again, all of you understand this, but it needs to be repeated over and over again. Critical brain development takes place in the first 3 years of a person's life. Investing in education during those crucial years will pay a lifetime worth of dividends. Failing to invest will leave children behind long before they enter their first class. That's why all the education policy we've discussed this morning will mean very, very little indeed. No matter how much you may like the other ideas I've suggested to you, they will mean very, very little indeed if our children don't come to school prepared to learn, if they lack the social, emotional, cognitive, and language skills that are absolutely essential to learning in kindergarten for the rest of their lives. Every child in America deserves a pre-kindergarten education. We should provide incentives to our states and communities to invest more in early childhood programs in our nation. We should guarantee that every early childhood teacher is well-trained, well-rewarded, and we should dedicate the resources to recruit and retrain them in our country. I believe in that very, very strongly. Let me say to all of you here, I applaud all of you for the work that the American Montessori Society has done to advance early childhood education. Now that work needs to be done on a national scale. Those then are the steps I think we need to be taking. I'm sure there are many other ones, but those five steps I think are critical. From involving parents to challenging students, from keeping our promises to the poorest, from giving our best start to the youngest, are the steps our children and their education demand. Sometimes it seems, if any time we try to talk about fixing the schools in this country, we risk losing sight of the schools themselves and the living children who learn in them. But I have faith that the words that we will speak here as you gather for this conference very soon will find themselves reflected in the lives of your students and our children across this country, in the growth of their minds and in their love for their lessons. I don't do the teaching myself, but I can help make it richer, fairer, and more fruitful, because I happen to sit in a place in the United States Senate where we can create change. Because in the end, I believe we all want the very same thing for America's children. One morning in San Lorenzo, Dr. Montessori was late to the children's house. And as she was unlocking the door, she turned and saw half a boy sticking out of a window. He was climbing through because he couldn't wait for the day to begin. Now that's exactly what all of us want, a world in which all of our sons and daughters love learning so much that they can't wait to climb through a window to get it. I know it's an awful lot to ask. It's entirely probably too much to ask for. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's ask any way of our country to do a lot better job at educating America's children. And I thank you immensely for inviting me to be part of this conference today. Thank you all very much. Very nice. Thank you.
I've been given the privilege of thanking the senator, and I'd like him to just stay for a minute because I want to make the thank you serious. But before I even get to that, because I know that she's sitting right over there, would his sister Carolyn please stand up so we can... Carolyn, please stand up. Doug's right, we've been abusing her for decades. I have only one announcement to make before I go on with my expression of gratitude. At 11:30, we have the public policy panel. It's a discussion down on the seventh floor, up on the... This is the only hotel where only in New York could you have the main lobby on the eighth floor. But it's a public policy with Dr. Pedro Noguera, a professor of NYU and director of the Center of Research. And it's
going to
deal with global...
This is KZYX and Z, Philo, California, KZYX and Z, and you're listening to Jack Blessington at the AMS conference.
Trying to keep him in the party. I cannot guarantee how many Democrats are in the House, but God forbid us that there are any Republicans in the room. Anyway, I've been asked to do this largely because I'm a constituent of the senators from Connecticut, and we're asking that everyone from Connecticut come up later and have a Connecticut picture taken. I'm also here because I represent the beginning of this to some degree, as Doug said, asking for people to stand with him. I was hired by Nancy Rambusch in 1960. She asked me to help a little bit to do some administering, and when she left to go on with her passion for selling this gospel to us all, I took over at Whitby and stayed there until 1974. I met Mario Montessori, and I got very emotional. I kissed him. I think I kissed him on the lips. We Irish, when we get carried away, we get carried away. Anyway, I joined the American Montessori Society in 1960, and I'm a life member. It's like a prison sentence, but I'm a life member. I was on the board for well over a decade. I do not mind repeating what has been gloriously called my memoir. I did not know I wrote one, but I guess I did one night. To say that one of the rainbows, clearly, for Nancy Rambusch and the American Montessori Society are Doug and Maria Gravel. So let them stand and get a round of applause. There were clouds on the horizon at one point. I think Doug tackled a guy taking out a mimeograph machine to keep this thing going, and Cleo Monson. As Maya Angelou said yesterday, we all stand up with millions of people in that rainbow coalition of our lives. I want to say too that it's exciting to be here this week on the centennial, and also to notice how quick we are to pick up on things. People wonder, are we moving ahead? Nienhaus has just announced today a new apparatus. It's called the Marlene Baron Saran Wrap Computer, Laptop Computer Pouring Exercise. We observe and we follow through on these. I also don't mind peddling the exhibit for this Montessori exhibit. It does cost a few dineros if you go there, I admit to that. But I was coming home last night around midnight from a prayer service, and and I saw many of you pouring out of saloons and bars all over Times Square, so it would not be too much for you to spend a few dollars on the... I also want to note, in thanking the senator and his family, that we know that he's running for the presidency. And would it not... Can you imagine if we had a president in the White House who knew anything about Montessori? Would it be too much, Senator, to, if you make it, to give us a holiday? Just... Leave no Montessori teacher behind. It's... But in thanking you, I want to say this. We know what's been going on in elections. If you have any trouble in Florida or in Ohio, we will unleash 5,000 five-year-olds with beads. We will have those singers from last night from Springfield. We will have our beads, our bead bars, our red bars, our bead frames. There will be no cheating if you call upon us. Thank you, Senator, for coming.
And that was the Senator Christopher Dodd at the AMS 2007 Centennial Conference, celebrating the life and Maria Montessori and children all over the world, and I hope that you enjoyed it. I'm just so open to taking calls and your comments on what you've heard at 895-2448 or 800-499-7117. And if you have any questions on what you've heard, I'd just love to hear about it. And I wanted to share something with you. When I was giving station ID at the bottom of the hour, KZYX, this is KZYX, 90.7 FM Philo and 91.5 FM Williston Ukiah, and you're listening to Education Now. You're listening to Education Now. What he was saying was is that Christopher Dodd had Senator Lieberman in his trunk. That made me laugh. Well, I want to share some words to you by Maria Montessori, and this is from The Absorbent Mind. Today, while the world is in conflict and many plans are afoot for its future reconstruction, education is widely regarded as one of the best means for bringing this about. For no one disputes that mankind, from the mental point of view, is far below the level that civilization claims to have reached. I too believe that humanity is still far from that stage of maturity needed for the realization of its aspirations, for the construction, that is, of a harmonious and peaceful society, and the elimination of wars. Men are not yet ready to shape their own destinies, to control and direct world events, of which instead they become the victims. But although education is recognized as one of the ways of raising mankind, it is nevertheless still and only thought of as an education of the mind. It is proposed to train on the same lines as of old, without trying to draw upon any new vitalizing and constructive forces. I do not doubt that philosophy and religion can bring to the task an immense contribution, but how numerous are the philosophers in this ultra-civilized world? How many have there not been in the past, and how many more will there not be in the future? Noble ideals and high standards we have always had. They form a great part of what we teach. Yet warfare and strife show no signs of abating. And if education is always to be conceived along the same antiquated lines of a mere transmission of knowledge, there is little to be hoped from in it in the bettering of man's future. For what is the use of transmitting knowledge if the individual's total development lags behind? Instead, we must take into account a psychic entity, a social personality, a new world force, innumerable in the totality of its membership, which is at present hidden and ignored. If help and salvation are to come, they can only come from the children, for the children are the makers of humanity. The child is endowed with unknown powers which can guide us to a radiant future. If what we really want is a new world, then education must take it at its aim the development of these hidden possibilities. Our day has seen a great awakening of interest in the mental life of the newly born. Some psychologists have made special observations of the baby's growth from the first 3 hours after birth. Others, as a result of careful study, have come to the conclusion that the first 2 years are the most important in the whole span of human life. The greatness of the human personality begins at the hour of birth. From this almost mystic affirmation, there comes what may seem a strange conclusion, that education must start from birth. Strange, because how, in a practical sense, can we educate a newborn baby or even an infant during the first 2 years of his life? What lesson shall we give to this tiny being who understands nothing of what we say and cannot even move his limbs or her limbs? Or do we mean only hygiene when we speak of this little one's education? Not at all. We mean far more than that. Now, Montessori, as I told you, she wanted to be a teacher when she was a young woman, but her mother felt that that was not challenging and that was too much a woman's kind of occupation. And she was an only child, and she wanted her daughter to challenge herself more. And so Montessori went into medicine, and her father was very annoyed with her for not following her own desires, and so she could not participate in the the cadavers and do the experiments that she needed to do to become a physician, because the men were there. So she had to go at night and walk alone to the Lyceum and to do her work, and her father would walk with her in silence because he was so annoyed with her for taking this track instead of following her own will. Later, when Montessori went off to, she became involved with someone she cared about very much who was in the upper classes. She was middle class, and she got pregnant, and she did not tell her parents. She had the baby. She had Mario, her son. And she took Mario to live with a couple who lived in the woods. And she would go visit Mario. And Mario said whenever she came, he knew that Maria was his mother. And after Maria's mother died, not her father, after her mother died, she told her father, and they went and got Mario, and Mario came to live with her because it was her mother whose rejection and opinions so terrified her, not her father's, which I always thought was very interesting. And I always thought it was interesting that this man that was the father of her child didn't marry her because she was not upper class. Now, Maria Montessori was not a stuffy person. I've heard Berta Wise, who was one of the people who did get to meet Maria before she died, talk about how she would say when she came here to California, "Let's put on lipstick and go over to Catalina," which I thought was very wonderful. She was not a stuffy person, and she was not that kind of person who would, if you read her work and you read who she admired and the teachers that she admired Helen Keller's teacher. She admired Helen Parkhurst, who worked with Montessori and learned a lot about Montessori and took Montessori's training, but then went on to develop her own educational system. But when Montessori's, when world they had World Fair in San Francisco in the early 1900s, and they wanted Montessori to run a classroom enclosed in glass so that people could observe self-directed children. And she wanted Helen Parkhurst to be the teacher in that classroom. That's who she wanted. She didn't want someone who was always appealing to her handbook, or but because she knew that it was not the handbook, but it was the teacher. If she understood the children and she followed the children and not someone who was religiously quoting her and also just sticking with her thoughts. That's why AMS goes out to people like William Crane and to Art Costa, to these people who were innovators who prove that Montessori's observations were correct, but they're not Montessorians. And that's the object, is that we're constantly, education is a process, democracy is a process, and constantly bringing in new science and new information which supports the futurist's ideas or the futurist observations. And of course, Montessori would have never have denied evolution. As a matter of fact, if you read about Montessori and what she says about water, when you read what she says about water, you are introduced to the way the water works on the earth, that you would never question what global warming was doing to the planet. And yet I see that we do question that. And I think when she says intelligence, that's one of the problems, is that if we are so intelligent, why do we keep creating problems which are destroying humanity and our planet, if we are so intelligent? So we need to back up and observe and take some lessons from Montessori, believe in ourselves and our own ability, and not use her as a someone follow like you would a leader, but someone who gets you going on your own, gets you thinking and loving the learning that you're doing, gets you following your passion. Well, let's see. Next week, next on the 31st, which is the fifth Thursday of May, I'm going to be back again with Education Now, and I'm going to bring you an address by Dr. Marlene Baron from the Department of Education at NYU, who opened the conference, this conference which Christopher Dodd was at, and I think you're going to enjoy it very much. My contact information is hermes@pacific.net. That's H-E-R-M-E-S at pacific.net. And this is being recorded and will be up on my website, as are all of the programs on Education Now, at www.pacificsites.com. pacificites.com/TildeHermes, H-E-R-M-E-S. I want to thank the producers, the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, and the staff at KZYX and Z, and Marcy Crevin at AMS headquarters for all her help with getting me these recordings. And before we go to Earth and Sky and the Treehouse, I want to give you some promos and some ideas of what's coming up in the future here at KZYX and Z. So hold on. I'm going to give you a little tiny bit of music. Here we go. I think it's this one right.
Are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You can give them your love, but not your thoughts. For they have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts. You can house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You can strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You can give them your love, but not your thoughts. For they have their own thoughts. They have their own.
I wanted to bring you some of that Sweet Honey in the Rock, which was they were there at the conference. And I want to tell you that the Access Program tomorrow, Friday at 9 a.m., join Norm Duvall on the Access Program, the policies behind the daily news, with his guest supervisor Jim Wattenberger, Sheriff Tom Allman, and Dr. William Courtney to discuss the medical marijuana policy to be established in Mendocino County. Once again, I'm open to taking your calls at 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. Now, let's see. I want to give you some information, some promotional information. The Ukiah Unified School District is having their Dog and Jog event on Saturday, May 19th at 9:30 a.m. at the Pomalita Middle School, North Spring Street, Ukiah. Fun dog and kid-friendly walk around the west side of Ukiah supports Ukiah Unified School Enrichment Program in an active and healthy way. And so that is May 19th at 9:30 a.m. Then at the Willits Community Center, Willits local first fashion show and tea, Sir Optimus International of Willits, a benefit for Willits High School Scholarship, Peer Counseling, and Peer Health. Come see local celebrities in a tux. For information or tickets, call Linda at 459-1519. And let's see what else I have here. Willits High School Peer Counseling, a Lifetime Theater Can You Hear Me Now? May 16th, Fridays, May 18th and 19th at 8 p.m. Oh, we have a caller. Let's see who that is. Hold on a moment. Hello?
Oh, hi. I'm calling over here from Sea Ranch. And you mentioned the Maria Montessori. Talked about or wrote about the way water works on the planet.
Yes.
Do you have a reference?
Yes, I do. I do. It's in her. It's actually in this book that I have The Absorbent Mind. And if you would like, I would be more than happy to send you the exact page and the references. If you would send me, do you have a computer?
Yes, I do.
Would you send me an email at Hermes, H-E-R-M-E-S, at pacific.net.
Okay, I did get that down earlier.
And I'd be more than happy to send that information to you. Yes, she talks about, you know, the river in the ocean and how it carries, you know, how it has to be cold enough, you know, so that it sinks, and so that then it carries, it goes all the way, comes over here to the Pacific Ocean from the Atlantic Ocean and carries the limestone, and then that builds up new land masses and continents. And it's beautiful. So I'd be more than happy to send it to you.
Well, great, because I'm going to a conference that River Network is putting on at Skamania Lodge in Washington this next 3 days, all about water issues.
Great.
So thank you.
You're so welcome.
Bye.
Bye now. Well, that was fun. Okay, so now I'm going to go on here with some PSAs. I wanted to tell you, let's see. Oh, Tree of Life Montessori Charter School is having a summer program. It's starting June 25th, and it goes through July 27th. Sign-ups are now. First come, first serve. Tree of Life Montessori Charter School in Ukiah will be having a summer program. There will be an integrated curriculum including music, sports, art, drama, core subjects, and environmental education, guided with Montessori materials and taught by credentialed teachers. 5 one-week sessions are available to choose from starting June 25th. Please call 462-0913 for more information. That's 462-0913 and ask for Rhonda. Let's see here. I want to be sure. Of course, coming up at the top of the hour will be Earth and Sky, and then WDM with the Treehouse for some laughs, which are so, so good for us. But I wanted to give you some more because I know there's a lot of things going on with schools around the area. I told you about Pomelita. Mendocino County Library and Instilling Goodness Elementary School is having the Butterfly Magic for Children and Charlene Light Saturday, May 19th from 10:30 to noon at Ukiah Public Library. Children are invited to sing and dance, listen to stories, do crafts, and create the life cycle of a butterfly through movement. That's you can call 467-1170 for more information. That's Saturday, May 19th, 10:30 to noon. And Rural Rock and Roll, Humboldt Invades Mendocino, Mendocino Film Festival in the Crown Hall, May 19th at 7:30 p.m. The Mendocino Film Festival presents the Humboldt music documentary, Rural Rock and Roll, plus a live show after party with three bands featured in the movie, The Blue Dot, Ian Fay, and Ravens. Call 310-367-2056 for more information. Well, oops, there went my something. Thank you, W. Dan. Well, this is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, K201 HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and I want to thank my producers, the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, for producing this show, and I want to thank all of the staff here at KZYX&Z for their wonderful support, and I want to thank Mendocino County Public Broadcasting and our listeners who support community radio. Thank you very much, and I'm going to give you Earth and Sky, I think, a little bit early tonight, and then you'll get W. Dan. Thank you so much for tuning in to Education Now. This is Athena Melville saying good night. Let's see if we can get Earth and Sky up here for you. Yes, I'm working on it, and I think I've got it now. Here we go.
Process to manufacture nanoparticles of uniform size and shape. Now, Andreas Stein and his team at the University of Minnesota say they